Do okay. that.
It's quite alright. Okay, so thank you all for coming to the share. So, last week, just to catch everybody up, so we discussed a general issue about the Neros Hanukkah. We saw that the Gemara says the basic level of obligation is Ner Ishu Beso, one candle per bias. So in the ideal situation, you have a father, a mother, all the kids sitting at home, who are very, very angelic. Technically speaking, halachically speaking, all they need is one candle. We do more, because the Gemara says you're able to do more if you want to be mahadran. If you want to be very firm about things. Really, technically speaking, it's one candle per household. And we saw that there are two ways to take that in the Mefarshim. One way was to assume that really each and every person in the household is individually obligated to light Neros Hanukkah, but for some reason they're all yotzei with a single candle. And alternatively, we saw another approach that said, no, it's a Neros Hanukkah or Chovas HaBayis, that the obligation initially was only incumbent on the bias, that's a term we'll further define tonight, and not on each individual person. And we saw that a potential nafkamina, potential ramification, was let's say somebody doesn't have a bias, let's say somebody's homeless, is he obligated in Neros Hanukkah? So Moshe Feinstein said he's not, because he has no bias, and the basic obligation is near issue based out. And we saw that Tzitzel Yasser said no. He said if you're on a teyul, or if you're homeless, you are obligated to write to let Neros Hanukkah wherever you are, in the middle of the field, because we don't necessarily need a bias. The obligation is an individual obligation on each and every person. So those are the two basic approaches to Neros Hanukkah. So this week, we're going to look further into a Gemara about somebody who is sort of in between, your regular average person, who's a guest. He's traveling around over the course of Hanukkah. And that's the Gemara, Daf Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. So we'll turn to the back page, where it's very nicely photocopied by Oren, who's amazing. I like him a lot. So the Gemara says as follows. It's the part that's bracketed in. Amar Rav Sheshet. Aksanai Chaya v'Ner Hanukkah. Aksanai is a guest. And a guest is obligated in Ner Hanukkah. Great. So that's statement number one. Now we have statement number two. A different person. Amar Rav Yizera. Mireish Kiavina Be'Rav. Originally, when I was a kid in Yeshiva, Mishtatafna Befriti Badei Ushviza. And I was being hosted by a local communal family when I was away abroad in Yeshiva. So by Hanukkah time, I would chip in to the oil. I would chip in to the candles. I would be mishtativ. I would participate with friti, with coins. And I wouldn't individually light, but I would participate in their lighting by contributing to the finances. But Basar de Nesivi Isisa, after I got married, I said, I don't have to do anything now. Because my wife is lighting for me at home. Great. And that's all the Gemara has to say is explicitly about travelers. Statement number one, Rav Sheshes, a guest is chayiv in Ner Hanukkah. Then Rav Zira telling you his life story. When I was a kid, before I was married, I used to participate with money. Now that I'm married, when I'm away in yeshiva, my wife lights for me at home, and I don't have to give anybody any coins. Presumably, he was happy about that. He got married. Probably had more of a financial burden. A kid's at home. He's living on a call stipend, apparently. Something that's familiar to at least one of us here. So, he was probably very happy about the fact that he didn't have to give up any coins to his host. Great. So, let's try to analyze this case of Aksanai, the case of the guest, in light of the two approaches we had. So an Aksanai is somebody, presumably, he's a real life person, but why is he different than your average person? Because he's not at home. So if a priori, before you're looking at any Gemaras, it might even have been better to not skew people's perceptions by looking at the Gemara, would you say an Aksanai, somebody who's a guest in somebody else's house, is Chayiv in Ner Hanukkah or not? So just work it through. If the obligation is an individual obligation on each and every person, irrespective of whether or not he has a house, meaning even if somebody's homeless, he's still chayav in Ner Hanukkah. So then presumably an aksanai, a guest, wouldn't be any worse than a homeless person. And just like a homeless person would have to light his candles in Central Park, he would have to light his candles wherever he happens to be in a field, a guest, somebody who's traveling, shouldn't be any worse. So he should also be obligated in Ner Hanukkah. But the more you think of Nir Hanukkah as a Chovas HaBayis, as an obligation on the house, so then already things get a bit tricky. Because the host is already lighting. Rav Zira was staying by a family. That family, presumably, was lighting Nir Hanukkah on their own. The father, the mother, the kids, whoever was there, was lighting their own Nir Hanukkah. The guest, Rav Sheshes, Rav Zira, isn't necessarily part of the bias, but there's already a candle being lit inside the bias. So there's already a candle being lit inside the bias, and he isn't officially living there. He doesn't own the house. He doesn't have his own apartment, his own room in the house. So maybe it's not really his bias. So maybe he really he should be no worse than the homeless person, who, if you assume it's a chovas bias, may not necessarily have any obligation in Nir Hanukkah. And that's why this Gemara is somewhat relevant for the general question. I mean, the more you think that Nir Hanukkah is a Chovas HaYachid, each individual person is obligated in Nir Hanukkah, so then an Aksana is not going to be any worse than a homeless person. The more you think it's a Chovas HaBayis, then things get a little bit more complicated, because the bias is already being taken care of by the host family, by the family that lives there. The oxen is a random person. So maybe he shouldn't have to light. Maybe he shouldn't be able to light. And that's exactly what some of the Rishonim said. You look at the first page, the Orkos Chaim. Orkos Chaim was a 14th century Rishon in the city of Lunil, which I think is Provence, which is southern France or northern Spain. Is that true? I don't know.
Southern France.
Isn't it like between France and Spain? It's like the whole. No?
Possibly.
I don't know.
But it shouldn't make any difference if he's married.
But right. I should have said this before. The last line of the Gemara about people lighting for you in your house, we'll deal with next week. That complicates matters. You're right. Logically speaking, the way I set it up, it shouldn't matter if the person is married or not. So for this week, we'll deal with people who don't have like a home base that you go back to on a regular basis or something of that sort. Would you like to read the Orkos Chaim?
Sure.
14th century. Ashur Min Lunil.
Okay. Achsanai Atal Ashtu Inan Dehava Amina Chuba Tarahu Kimut Mezuzah Kivan Shamar Mitzvah Hanika Petach Beito Ve'ema Shemish Yesh Lo Petach Chayav, umishain lo petach yipater. Kamash malan, chayav velo dani umizazah.
Exactly. So, what's he saying? He's saying, you would have thought what? You have all these gemaras, they never should be so. And where should you put the Hanukkah candles? You should put them in Orah, Pesach Beso. Ideally, you're supposed to put the Hanukkah candles by the door. He's saying, what would you think? You would think that your Hanukkah is parallel to mezuzah. If you have a house, you're chayav. If you don't have a house, you're pater. That's exactly why this Gemara about Aksanai exists. Rav Sheshes needs to tell you that Aksanai is chayav in your Hanukkah to tell you that no, that granted, halakhically speaking, one candle suffices per house, and granted you're supposed to put the candles al Pesach Beso by the doorway of the house, but the house isn't the central element in the obligation. Really, each individual person is chayav. If you have a house, you put the Neros Hanukkah by the doorway. If you have a family inside a house, one candle suffices for everybody. But really, it's an individual obligation, and that's why the aksana is going to be chayav. I'd have a mina chovas tarahu k'mavazazah. I would have thought that it's an obligation of tarah means like a gate. It's an obligation on the gate, meaning the house, like mezuzah. K'mashmalan, no, that an aksana is really chayav. But if we wanted to really hold chovas avayis, that's an obligation on the house, and assume that the host family is really lighting, so then we're sort of stuck. So why would an aksanai be chayav then? And that's what we're going to try to explain in the next 2 minutes. The last week, it was the Rambam who sort of developed the idea for us as a chovas avayis. He was the one who defined the mitzvah as kol bayis tobayis chayav v'hadlik. He said the subject of the mitzvah is the bayis, not the individual person. The Rambam also said that even though you're lighting, it's 80 or 90 candles per household, Not each individual member of the house doesn't light. Only one person lights for everybody. Again, seemingly implying that it's a communal obligation. It's a pious obligation, not an individual obligation. So the Rambam would be very bothered by this Gemara. Why would an Aksanai be chayav in Yer Hanukkah if it's really a Kovas Abayis? So think of it. So look in the Rambam and see how he actually quotes it. And that's what's here. Rambam seemingly quotes the Gemara verbatim, but he has a number of subtle changes that might be trying to deal with this problem. If it's really a Kovas Abayis, like he set out for us, so why is the guest going to be chayav? So this is the Rambam Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah. He puts these things together in the fourth parak, somewhere in the middle. Does anybody want to read? If not, I'll read. Okay, I'll read. So Oreach Shemadikan Alav B'Tel Peso. The first part of the halacha is the part we're not going to deal with. Let's say you have somebody who's a guest, but he has a family at home who's lining on his benchat. So Inu Sarak Lahamdek Alav Malham Shinusar Yakto. If you have your wife, your family lining for you back at home, if you're traveling, you don't have to light yourself. What happens if Eid lo bayis lahadlik alav po? Let's say you're a nomad, you're a student in yeshiva, you don't have a house that you go back to. Tzarek lahadlik makom mishnes arayach po. So you have to light in the place where you're lodging, in the place where you're a guest. Mishtate pimayim v'shema. So what do? You chip in for the oil. V'mhayil lo bayis b'fnei atzmo. If you have your own house, that's a different Gemara. That even if you already yotze your obligation, let's say you have a family and you have a house, you happen to find a hefker house in the middle of the street, you walk in, you're sleeping there that night. It's not really your house, but you're sleeping there. So people see you walking in and out. So there's a gzeira that people will see you walking in and out of a house, and there's no nearest Hanukkah there. They'll think you're a Christian. They'll think you're a bad person, whatever it is. Probably won't think you're Christian, they'll think you're a Zoroastrian, whatever they thought in times of the Gemara. And therefore, Mitra Banan, they tell you to light in any house where you're sleeping, if there aren't any candles there anyway. Well, let's put that on the side for a second. But the main point of the halacha for us, sorry, go ahead.
Isn't it all Drabanan?
It is all Drabanan. But this is a lower level Drabanan, Mishum Kshad, meaning just because of suspicions and suspicious people. And there are different dinim for that type of lighting. But the main lines for us are the end of the first line. You have to light a place where you're lodging. And you chip in with the oil. So when I read this for the first time, I thought it was a verbatim quote of the Gemara. Go back to the Gemara for a second. What does the Gemara say? There are two stages in the Gemara. First, you have Rav Shisha saying that in Aksanai Chayav in Yer Hanukkah, he's obligated to light. And then you have Rav Zera saying that when I was a guest, I would chip in with the money. That seems to be what the Rambam says. Tzorak l'hadlik v'agam shenes arayach bo, v'nishtat eifi v'anin v'shemen. You're obligated to light, and you chip in with the oil, chip in with the money. But on second thought, I've seen Achrona point this out. If I ask you, based on the Gemara, if you're a guest, how many options do you have in front of you? What should you do? What do you say? It sounds like two. Sounds like you have two options. You could either light yourself, Aksanai Chayav in Yer Hanukkah, take that one independently and says you're obligated to light. And then Rav Zera comes along and says, like, one way to fulfill your obligation, if you don't want to light yourself, is to chip in with the money. So it sounds like you have two options. According to the Rambam, how many options does our guest have? It says says, you're obligated to light in the place where you're staying. And you participate by adding in oil. It sounds like one.
Can you
look at the Gemara, has two separate statements. Number one is that your guest is obligated in Nero's Hanukkah. If you took that statement independently, so what would it mean? That he has to light a candle. Then Rabbi Zero comes along and says, when I was a guest, I used to chip in with the oil. I didn't light my own candle. I just gave the owner of the house some money. So the Gemara sounds like there are two equally valid options for a guest. You could either light on his own, or he could, if he doesn't want to light on his own, he could chip in with the money. The Rambam seems to conflate them into the same thing, into the same obligation. The guest is obligated to light, and he chips in with the oil. It sounds like the way the guest fulfills the obligation is by chipping in with the oil. There aren't really two options. When Rabbi Zeira comes along and says that when I was a guest, I would chip in with the money, he's not giving you an alternative to lighting on your own. He's explaining for you what it means that an oxenai is chayev. Oxenai is chayev. If you're a guest, you're a chayev. What are you chayev to do? So you would think you're chayev to light. Rav Zera comes along and tells you that no, you're not chayev to light. You're obligated to chip in with the oil, but you cannot light on your own.
So he's reading Rav Sheshis as saying guests have obligations, and Rav Zera is clarifying how that obligation is fulfilled.
Exactly.
And you're saying that there's an alternative reading that Rav Sheshis is saying. How would you read that as making an option? He doesn't say achnasai. He doesn't mention halakha, for instance.
Right.
He just says chayav v'ner chanukah. But you would read that alternatively as
he's obligated to light on his own. And Rav Zera is giving you, he's arguing or giving you an alternative, whatever he's doing, but it's not the same thing as chayav. Chayav, in the context of ner chanukah, would seemingly mean you're chayav to light.
Just because usually you light.
That's what chayiv means all throughout these napping about Ner Hanukkah.
But do we have to say that Rabbi Zera is arguing specifically? Like, maybe he didn't feel like lighting his own menorah, but like really that would be okay with him too.
Right, that's definitely a valid way to read Gemara. That even Rabbi Zera assumes you have two options. You can do whatever you want. But the Rambam seemed to have read the Gemara differently. He seemed to have conflated Rav Sheshet and Rabbi Zeira, stage 1 and stage 2 of the Gemara, into the same thing. Aksanai is chayav. What is he chayav to do? He's not chayav to light. He can't light. He's chayav to chip in with the money. Great. So what was our problem? Our problem was that if the Rambam assumed that it's a chobas abayis, that the obligation is on the house as a whole, and the household is already lighting, so how could the guest light? He doesn't have a personal obligation. He's only obligated to light in his own house. This is not his house. So why is he obligated to light? The family is already lighting. But if you take the Rambam literally, the problem is solved. Because the Rambam doesn't think that a guest could light his own menorah. A guest is unable to light his own menorah. He's only able to chip in for the oil in the Baal Bayis's, in the host's menorah.
I'm confused. Could I ask? Sorry.
Yeah, for sure.
So if for the Rambam it's a chovas habayis. So the question is, why would an orach have to be? Why would he have to do anything at all? The house is just going to light a candle, and he's part of the house at the moment. So even if he's being mishtatev, shouldn't you still wonder why does he have to be mishtatev?
That's exactly the next stage of the shir. That granted, we solved half of our problem in the Rambam. He can't light on his own. He has to be mishtatev. But what's the role? Why does he have to give money in the first place? What does that money accomplish?
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So that's exactly where we're going.
But the point is, he's still. No, but even before that, the fact that you're even saying that an orach is chayav is weird for the Rambam.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a much bigger problem that the guy's lighting on his own candle. Then it's really a complete contradiction to the Rambam's entire theory. if all the Oreach has to do is chip in money, contribute financially to the candle of the Baal HaBayis, so that already is different, and that already we might be able to fit in with the Chovas HaBayis perspective.
Okay. I guess
you're saying it hasn't solved any problem.
I don't know. I feel like it's not so contrary to the Rambam to say that the Oreach is chayav, because that case before, if like nobody is lighting in the house where you're staying, then you would have to make sure that there wasn't an Or being lit there.
Meaning, Chovas HaBayis, meaning you have to make sure that there is a menorah being lit.
In the house that you're... Yeah, they're saying it.
So to say that an Oreach is chayav could mean, like, he's responsible. He's equally responsible.
And you're saying the way Chazal formulated it or concretized that is by forcing him to chip in financially to make sure that it's going to be lit.
Well, I don't know.
You don't know, but that would be one way to go. Right. So let's keep that question in mind. If assuming it's really a Chovas HaBayis, what's the purpose of chipping in financially? And what's the role of the money? So we have to analyze this within our Chovas HaBayis and Chovas HaYachid perspectives. If it's a Chovas HaYachid, so really each individual person is obligated to light. So then the coins are somewhat surprising. Generally speaking, you can't pay somebody else to do a mitzvah for you. So just like we had a problem in Yerush Uveso, how could everybody in the household be Yotzei with one candle? If we assume really each individual person is obligated, we're going to have a parallel issue over here. If the Aksanai is really Chayim himself, so then why could he just chip in financially and be Yotzei that way? If it's a Chovas HaBayis, then we're going to have to figure out what's the relationship between money, chipping in financially, and the Chovas HaBayis. How do you get from one point to the next?
I just feel generally confused about what the individual responsibility is when there's a Chovas HaBayis at all. Like, if we're going to talk about a Chovas, I just don't understand, like, how that trickles down to individuals and the HaBayis.
So, in a very general way, it sounds like everybody in the household, or everybody in the house, we'll get there in a second, is obligated to make sure that a candle is lit somewhere around here.
So would you say that they have an individual chiyuv?
Yeah, meaning somebody in the family has to take care of it. The family as a whole. Just like the family as a whole is obligated to pay taxes, meaning if you're...
Yeah.
So too, the family as a whole is obligated to do this.
Right, so what I still don't get is, like, would it ever... If you were to say individuals have responsibilities, would that be inconsistent with Chovas HaBayis?
Meaning, it might be. If you assume it's a Chovas HaBayis, so then just like if you have a family, and one member of the family takes care of taxes, so everybody else in the family is suffices with that, you might assume it's the same thing with the Chovas HaBayis.
So,
assuming somebody is taking care of it, so everybody else is Yosef.
So if someone were to be Sarif Mahadlik, for instance, that certainly sounds like an individual obligation.
It sounds like an individual obligation.
So right. Is that inconsistent with it being Chovas HaBayis?
We'll get there in a second.
Okay, fine.
First glance, the answer is yes, but we'll get there in a second.
Okay.
So first, let's assume it's a Chovas HaYachid. Each individual person is obligated to it. So why in the world is chipping in money help? Right. So one way to resolve this question is to try to figure out how much money are you giving. Go back to the Gemara. So what does the Gemara say? How much money is he giving? It says, Mishtatafna Befriti. I contributed with coins, in the plural. You look in the Shulchan Aruch, the top source on the second page, it says, Aksanai She'in Madika Nafaveso, a guest, Saraklasi Spruta Levalabayis. You have to give one coin. A pruta is like 5 cents nowadays. It doesn't buy you so much. So, the Gemara, within the Gemara, it's a bit open how much money Rav Zera actually gave. With the Shulchan Aruch, Paskin says it's one pruta, it's one coin. One coin doesn't get you so much. You could fulfill an individual obligation with one coin. But the Elior Rabba, who's one of the later postgame, who often gets quoted in the Mishavurah, implicitly challenges the Shulchan Aruch on this point. He says, no, one pruta is not going to be enough. That's it. Here's what he says. Vishtatif. The second source. Shemanti shetarach lahusev mashiit in chaviro. So let's say the guest gives money to the baal bayis, gives money to the host. So what does the host do with the money? So he says, I heard people are saying that the host can't pocket the money. He has to use the money towards the candle, towards the oil. Great. And he gives one possible reason why he has to do that. Skip down to the second to last line. L'chi nirali. Taima shamad l'gmachuyav v'tein kishir chati sha'am yomono. The guest is obligated to give enough money so that the candle will last for a full half an hour. L'chein tzarek l'hosev kulo. Therefore, the lighter, the baal bayis, has to add on the amount of oil that will cause it to last for another half an hour. If you're not giving a full half an hour's worth of oil, so you're not going to give to Yotze your own obligation. So the Gemara says priti, just give coins. Shavanarek says one pruta. The Eliarava says no, you should follow the Gemara. The Gemara says coins. How many coins? Enough money to buy oil to last for a half an hour. Why? Because if you don't give that amount, you're not fulfilling your obligation. You're not having a candle being lit for the proper requisite shear for you. So the Eli Rabba seems to be viewing this money as a way to fulfill your own obligation. You have an obligation to light a candle. The candle has to be lit for half an hour. So you're basically paying somebody else to do it. You're basically paying somebody else to add on that amount to his candle. He'll be your shliach, and he'll light that candle for you. When that half an hour worth of oil is lit, or is consumed, or is used as fuel for that fire, it's going to be for you. So, it's still a bit unclear how this is working, but Eliyahu Rabba is clearly viewing it as an individual obligation on the guest, and therefore he has to give a full shear of oil to the baal bayis. And lechora, that's the purpose of the money, basically, to allow somebody else to light the candle on your behalf. Point to shliach. Great. So that's, if it's really an individual obligation, so then you're going to have to buy the full amount of the oil. Let's say it's a chovas habayis. So what's the role of the money then? So Michael was very, very insistent that if it's a chovas habayis, the option I should be completely patur, and the money should be worthless. And that's exactly what the Sfas Emes said. Sfas Emes was the late Chassidish Rebbe, the first Ger Rebbe, I think. No, second, third Ger Rebbe. One of the Ger Rebbes. He also wrote a parish on a number of Sanctus and Shas, which is great. So he explicitly formulates this idea of Chovas Habayis, and he says, it's the bottom part, is the Ishlahayin, Ya mitzvah nira echa bevayis, kimo mezuzah, kimo nir Shabbos. Maybe mitzvah's Hanukkah, it's like mezuzah and Shabbos, then it's a chovas habayis. Dot. Skip down to the underlying part. Vahadu shpisa mishtante befriti. So if it's really a chovas habayis, why in the world does a guest have to chip in money? Yishlomar, shehu kidei la'asos ha-mitzvah b'mimono. It's an additional level. You take part or participate in the mitzvah in some way, shape, or form. Avo medina yotze. But really, you're yotze with the lighting of the actual baal bayis, with the lighting of the host. So Michael's going to say, it doesn't really fit with the Rambam. The Rambam says, tzarech lahavlik. Seems to say it's a real obligation. But the Sfas Emes takes chovas habayis to the extreme. It's like really a chovas habayis. You're not part of this bayis. The candle is being lit on this bayis, in this bayis, by somebody else. And therefore, the guest is really completely patur. Why does he have to chip in? It's a good thing to do, to participate in mitzvahs. But not really, it's not a real obligation. So, the Sfas Emes basically took a Gemara. It says the guest is chayav, which the Orchos Chaim said, we see from there that it's an individual obligation. Took the Gemara and completely turned it on its head. You need a guest is patur. What it means when a guest is chayiv, it just means that he has to chip in. What does he have to chip in? Not really to be able to see the mitzvah. He has to chip in because he wants to be a good Jew. He wants to participate in the mitzvah of the Aruch Hanukkah in some way, shape, or form. But really, he's completely patur from the mitzvah. It's a complete chovas habayis perspective. But there's another way. There's another way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is to sort of redefine what we mean when we say chovas abayis, or to clarify it. Up until now, when we're talking about chovas abayis, I guess I was leaving it fuzzy. But let's say this chasemus. Chasemus seems to be viewing it in terms of the structure of the house. Each house in which Jews live requires a candle. So the candle is there already, so the guest is going to be butter, because somebody else is lighting the candle in the house. But if you go through Chumash, and you go through Shas, the word bayis doesn't always mean the physical structure of the house. Sometimes it means the household, the family. I'd say the pasuk says, Vayishmak kol beis paro, that the rumor that Yosef's cries when he was revealing himself to his brothers were heard in the beis paro. So Unkelish translates beis paro as by the people in Paro's house. Rashi there points out that sometimes the word bayis is used when there is no physical structure whatsoever. Say, beis Yisrael, beis Yehuda, beis Aaron. It's referring to a household, to a group of people who are joined together, not necessarily a house, the physical structure of the house. So maybe that's what chovas abayis means. Ner ishu beisel doesn't mean one candle for the physical structure of the house. One candle for the family, for the household. So then the point would be, let's say you have an ox now, you have a guest. So not only does he not own a house, he's also not part of a family. He has no family structure. He's completely on his own. So what does he, it's very sad. So what does he do to become part of a household? What does he have to do to join some other household, join the household of his host? So, have to chip in. If you want to become part of a certain household, chipping in financially is going to be one way to do that. So maybe that's the role of Rav Zira's Prutos. Rav Zira's coins weren't buying oil, enough oil to make him be able to the mitzvah. Rav Zira's coins were taking somebody from the outside, taking somebody who was just a guest, just passing through, just eating other people's food, and symbolically, by giving them money, becoming part and parcel of their household, and therefore he fulfills his mitzvah with the rest of the household. Father, mother, son, daughter, and now Rav Zera too. It's part of the household because he's chipping in financially. And if you want a nice formulation of this, it's a share from Moshe Kerrigan on the Bush's website. He's a very nice person. And he quotes Aharon and will say this. He says, Yesh Avshei Tziyu, for some people who suggested, this is the source in the second page, Shef Hashlom HaZeh, V'me'in Tzcharti Rasim Li. It's a form of symbolic rent. V'ulf Teka Tzahak Sinai, V'vin Bayit, Zmani, V'veit Ma'areach. And it transforms somebody from being a guest to being part of the household. It's like bringing a gift for Shabbos, by getting there before early on Shabbos, and like setting the table or something of that sort. It's like by contributing, becoming part of the household, therefore, you're being guilty with their mitzvah. So in terms of trying to figure out what the role of the coins are, so if you assume it's an individual obligation, so the coins might be to buy enough oil to fulfill your own individual obligation. You have to pay for enough oil to last for half an hour. If you assume it's really a chovas habayis in the sense of the structure of the house, then it's very hard to understand why an achsalai would be chayiv at all. And then maybe according to the Tzfas, he's not chayav at all. Really, the coin is just a way of contributing to a mitzvah. But really, there is no obligation for him to contribute. If you assume that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is chovas habayis in terms of the household, the family, and not the physical structure, so maybe chipping in financially is a way of symbolically becoming part of the household and thereby being connected to that family's Ner Chanukah.
So what if he's actually paying rent?
Sorry?
What if he's actually paying rent?
So that's something we'll deal with in a thing next week. Okay. Meaning what happens if people... Yeah, all sorts of in-between cases.
I mean, if he's actually paying rent, then that should be at least as good as symbolically paying rent.
That's what you would assume, according to this approach. And presumably that's what would happen. But it might be more complicated. If you're actually really paying rent, so then you might have your own individual house. I mean, let's say you pay rent, you have your own home away from the rest of the family. So maybe that's enough to create your own individual household or house inside the larger house.
So by paying more rent, you would symbolically not be paying rent?
Meaning, if you have a landlord-tenant relationship, so not becoming part of the landlord's...
Right, so how would getting more money help? Like, how would the pruta...
No, so giving a pruta, meaning it's somewhere in between. Meaning, if you have an apartment building over
here... Oh, you're saying if I'm actually paying rent, it might be too late.
It might be, you're going too far.
Unless I might be specifically someone who's just passing through.
Meaning, if you're not paying at all, so you're just a complete outsider. If you're paying full rent, then that's, it might be like your house. This is like somewhere in between, where you're becoming part of the broader household. So for the last 5 minutes, let's take these concepts and apply them to a real-life basis. So let's say you have two people, let's say, who are completely financially independent. And let's assume they don't have a family, they don't have a parent's house where they're getting money from, or... from which they go back to every once in a while. So you have two people, financially independent, who are both living in an apartment together. Two roommates in an apartment or two roommates in a house. They don't share expenses. Each one pays for their own room. They, generally speaking, they eat their own food. But they're living together. They're living in the same apartment. So what's their level of obligation in terms of Ner Chanukah? Could they suffice with one candle for two or three roommates? Or really, maybe everybody's—they're considered nevayis, so everybody's going to be yotzei with, fundamentally speaking, with one candle. And you really find a number of shittos about this. If you go back to the Tfas Emes, again, the Tfas Emes was a complete chovas nevayis, meaning the physical structure of the house approach. So in the middle there, he has this very, very interesting line. He says, Ulfiza, the beginning of the second line, Ulfiza Efshar, the Gambis Balipatim, Hadarim Bavayis Akad, Dailahim Benerachad. If you take a complete Chovas Bavayis perspective, bias meaning physical structure, so then it doesn't matter if these people are completely unrelated to each other. It doesn't matter that these people are completely financially independent. And so long as they're all living within the same structure, one candle is going to suffice for all of them. Ner ishu beiso, the word bias means a physical structure. So if you have two roommates, three roommates, whatever it is, even if people are financially independent, still, one candle suffices for everybody. One can light more, you can light more. Just like in normal families, everybody lights more. But fundamentally speaking, somebody's away, or whatever, you're going to say with a single candle, according to the Tfas Emes. Based on his idea, you can explicitly link it to the conceptual point that the chiyuv of Chanukah is on the physical structure. But that, or fortunately or unfortunately, it's not the normative shita. The two shitas that get quoted by my later poskim is the Lavush and what finally gets poskimed by the Mishnah Berurah. The Lavush was a posek, same time as the Ramah. He wrote like a parallel Shulchan Aruch. So he writes as follows. Shura Sadehu, the first source and the third page. The straight line, straight halacha is, Afila Anashim Harbe, Hadarim Bavayis Achad, Necholin Hishtatif Kulan B'Shemen, Vlotseis B'Ner Achad. So let's say you have our case. You have numerous Balabatim, numerous people who are all financially independent, living in the same house. So what should they do? They're all able to join together, or contribute towards one candle, and be Yotzei with that one candle. And he's not saying that the Tfas Emes, that one candle just suffices for everybody. Assuming one candle suffices for everybody, assuming that everybody chips in. So that's shita number two. And now shita number three is the shita that gets paskined by the Mishnah Berurah. Not explicitly, though implicitly. Just by the way he defines oxenai. So the Shulchan Aruch says an oxenai is chayev to light, whatever. In Mishnah Berurah, in Sifkatan Aleph, he defines oxenai in a very specific way. He says, "V'hu adin ha'bachrayim shalom dim shalom v'beisam, tzrikim l'shtateit, akapanim." So oxenai is another example of an oxenai is somebody who's learning in yeshiva, and he's staying by a certain family for a period of time. So he's obligated to chip in. V'davka b'vachar sh'okel v'fnei atzma, avolim samach al shulchan v'alabayis, So let's say you have a student who doesn't only live somewhere, but always is financially supported by the family which he's staying by. He eats their food. So then he's considered part of the family. Whatever. So they don't really have to like. So the Mishnah Berurah seems to say that. One second, please. Actually, no. Now that I'm reading it again, this seems to have no relevance to our situation. Great. Thank you. So it's not. It may not be the Mishnah Berurah, but. It's always good to have backup sheet notes just in case something like this occurs. I asked Shakhtar what he thought. What he thought about this, about two people living in an apartment together, financially independent. So he said that the Rebbe of Soloveitchik thought it was a davar pashut, that they're not considered a bias at all, and they're all going to be obligated to light individually. So then you really have three different opinions. Svasana says one candle suffices for everybody. Lavush says, if they all chip in for a single candle, that suffices for everybody, but they all have to chip in. And Rav Soloveitchik thought, and I think it's the Mishnah Berurah somewhere, but it's definitely not the one on the page, assumed that no, they're really considered individual people, and they can't even chip in for a single candle. They all have to light individually. And it seems to get back to the general approaches that they were developing. The more you assume that it's really an obligation on the physical structure of the house, then a single candle, no matter who lights it, is going to suffice for all the people living in that house. And that's as Hasem as a Shita. One person lights, everybody else yotzei, nobody has to contribute. The more you're assuming that it's a chobas habayis in terms of the household, so then already, the levush makes a lot of sense. That just like you could artificially become part of a household by chipping in. So maybe over here as well. If everybody chips in to buy one neir, to buy one menorah, so they're all becoming one household for the purposes of Neiros Chanukah, even though, generally speaking, they're financially independent. And Rav Soloveitchik's opinion was the third one. He was assuming that no, that really is an individual person's obligation, as Rav Shachter told me. And since it's an individual person's obligation, I think it's the way he said it at least. So they're all going to be obligated to light because they're all individual people living in an apartment individually. There's no financial ties. They're not considered one household, and therefore there's no way for have one person to be able to save somebody else. Yeah, Rabbi Yon.
So then, would Rav Soloveitchik also say that an Achsanai, like if an Achsanai can join in, then the only difference in that case is that you have a family unit that you're joining to. So is that the main difference, or is that it's really a chobat? Like it's a chobat on the person and not a chobat on the bayit.
You're asking, why should this be any worse than a regular achsanai?
Sure, why any different?
Why should it be any different? Why over here would you not be able to chip in? I guess the only difference is that in one case you have an established family structure, an established house. So I'm not sure why, logically, that should make a difference. I hear the question. I think our time is up, so I guess we can add questions we have afterwards. That's the story. Thank you all.